Hi, I'm Tavis Smiley, and you're listening to StutterTalk.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to Stutter Talk, episode 236 for October 31st, 2010. I am Peter Reitzis, here with my co-host Eric Jackson.
You are Peter Reitzis.
Yes, and you are Eric Jackson,
yes,
author of the forthcoming book, How to Use Your Stuttering to Meet Chicks, which of course is going straight to paperback.
it's like, and the video version of it is going right to video.
Too hot to touch. And we are on the phone with Lee Caggiano. Lee, how is it going?
I'm doing really well, and I'm very glad to be here this morning.
That is awesome.
It's great to have you, Lee.
Thank you.
Stutter Talk 206-666-5340, changing how people think about stuttering, one podcast at a time. Now, Lee, you have officially completed the stuttering hat trick. You are the mother of a person who stutters, you're director of a self-help or organization for people who stutter, and you are a speech-language pathologist. And
I am.
Yeah, that's the stuttering hat trick. And
is that it? The stuttering hat
trick? That's
the stuttering hat trick. Finally completed something. That's good to know.
Yeah, and we invited you on the show today to talk about acceptance and much more. We also want our listeners to know that you are a board-recognized fluency specialist and mentor in fluency disorders, an adjunct at New York University, Queens College, and Long Island University, and the director of FRIENDS, the National Association of Young People Who Stutter. Eric, we have some announcements today. Do you have any announcements?
I just want to let everybody know that we have a really great group in Brooklyn. And I know it's hard to get to. It's at Brooklyn College. It's out there in Brooklyn. But it's a really great group. And that's what I'll say. It's the second Thursday of every month. So the next one is November 8th. Maybe I should have got the date first, guys.
I'm really happy to hear that you've got a good group because I've got someone I want to send there.
Oh.
You're talking about November 11th.
I am talking about the 11th. Thursday, November 11th, from 7 to 9, room 41 to 25 in Boylan Hall on Brooklyn campus. And I will be signing copies of my new book, How to Pick Up Chicks as a Person Who Stutters.
How to Use Your Stuttering to Meet Chicks. Get the title right, Eric.
Get the title right.
Yeah.
All right. I have an announcement. Stutter Talk board member Phil Schneider has a wonderful new video out that Eric and I had a sneak peek of, and we love it. It's called Going with the Flow, A Guide to Transcending Stuttering, and this is a film by Phil and Ori Snyder, and they're having a world premiere film screening at the 2010 ASHA convention, which is in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and the screening will be November 18th at 7:45 p.m., and the location is the Philadelphia Marriott Hotel, room 401, 402, 403. They might have screened earlier editions of the film, but I think this is the completed final version.
And can anybody get into this? Do you know, Peter?
I don't know for sure. I think you will probably have to be part of the ASHA convention, but to find out more, you could go to schneiderspeech.com.
Man, it feels like a long time since me and you have recorded a show together.
It really has. I'm honored, right?
Yeah, this is great.
One last announcement, and then we're going to get into the stuttering stuff. Stutter Talk today received a check, a crisp check from Amazon.com. And we want to thank our listeners for using the Amazon.com search engine over at Stutter Talk. So when you do that, you go to StutterTalk.com. And on the left-hand sidebar, there is a Support Stutter Talk through Amazon link. And when you do your Amazon holiday shopping through that search engine, Stutter Talk gets a piece of every purchase, and it adds up. So thank you for using that, and please bookmark it and continue to use it. We know that Lee Caggiano is going to do that, right, Lee?
Yes, I'm actually jotting a note down as you speak to make sure I remember to do that.
Actually, what I can I can hear Lee doing right now is pre-ordering my book on Amazon.com.
You got it. Yeah, I'm just hoping that I get some kind of, I don't know, some kind of thanks someplace in that book. But I'll have to, I guess I'll have to buy it first to find out.
I guess I have to call the publisher then and add something in.
Well, Lee, I don't want to burst your bubble. I know you've taught Eric a lot, but I think he knew how to use his stuttering to meet chicks before he met you. I just
want the man branches out.
Yeah.
The man branches out.
Lee is has been – I don't know. I'm just going to stop right there.
Yeah, just stop.
All I'll say is Asha New Orleans, Lee. You know what I'm talking about.
I do. So let's just move on to the topic of the moment.
The topic of the moment is acceptance. The B team did a wonderful show on acceptance. We've got tons of positive feedback about that. I'm going to start us off here by saying what acceptance means to me, or at least one of the many things it means to me. Growing up as I refer to myself now as a formerly covert stutterer. So growing up as somebody who was as covert as I could be, most people didn't know that I stuttered. Acceptance for me was just realizing when I was in college that I had to accept that I stuttered. I had to stop denying it. So for me, acceptance meant shaking off denial and realizing that for things to get better, I was going to have to talk about it. I was going to have to admit to myself that I stuttered, and I would have to bring other people into that knowledge and say to other people, I'm a person who stutters, even if you don't know it, and I need to deal with it. I need to talk about it. I don't know how to deal with it. So for me, that is acceptance, or at least my first taste of acceptance. Lee, you got into stuttering because you are the mother now of a young man who stutters. You're also the director of a self-help group and a speech-language pathologist. As a mother of a person who stutters, what did acceptance mean to you, or mean to you now?
I've been giving this thought since I spoke to you about doing this podcast. I think possibly the mother part might be the most difficult for me to grasp hold of at this point. I'm looking back, and acceptance, maybe it's kind of all the same for most of us. Acceptance for me was getting to the point, I think I couldn't accept Michael stuttering, or couldn't accept that there was nothing I could do to make it easier. I think I couldn't start to accept that stuttering until I allowed myself to see that he could be okay and stutter. Like, as long as I still held on to things were not going to be okay for him ever, if he continued to stutter, I wasn't able to accept it. And I think the acceptance began when I started realizing that he could be just fine and stutter.
Now, how did you...
I'm thinking that... Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry, too. How did you get to that realization? I mean, did you wake up and just realize that, or did this come through talking with other people about stuttering? Like, how did you get there?
Peter, you've known me long enough. You know I don't wake up with this kind of realizations. They take decades. I think, and it did. It took a while, and I remember being at an NSP. It was NSP at the time, a support group for adults, and Michael was, I don't know, 9 or 10. And I remember looking, like, meeting these people, meeting a handful of people that I really got to know, and realizing they were like everything my husband and I would want for Michael. Everything, you know, we defined success by, and they stuttered. And it was like that point, I can't say that at that point it was like all of a sudden became okay. You know, at that point it was okay for these cool people to stutter, but not my kid.
Hmm.
I think it took time for me to realize that these people really were okay and still stutter.
But
I'm
so sorry, but isn't there some level of acceptance? I mean, to get to an NSA meeting, to get to a meeting of the National Stuttering Association, isn't there some form of acceptance to get you there, or do I not understand it?
You know, I don't know. The minute you asked that, I thought of all the people, clients and people I've encouraged to go to Friends, and I'm thinking, no, you don't. you might begin that road of acceptance, and maybe that's one of the pieces. It is a journey. It doesn't just happen.
Right.
Acceptance of anything doesn't just happen. So I think you, before you can go to something like a support organization, you have to be willing to explore the possibility that maybe there's something else. Maybe you're missing something. Maybe this fluency at all costs thing isn't what you want. You know, and we all, as we go through the stages of change, you start to see that maybe there's something else out there. But no, when I first went to a support group, I wasn't there yet. It took a while, and it took my son becoming more comfortable with himself for me to realize that he could really be okay and still stutter.
Yeah.
So, Lee, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I heard you initially equating being okay with acceptance. Can you talk a little bit about what it means to be okay, or what it meant for you, for Michael, to be okay with his stuttering?
To be okay. For Mike, his becoming okay with the stuttering was really his acceptance of it. His knowing he could do, be, whatever he wanted to do or be, and stutter. And it began for the whole family by talking about it. I mean, and that's how we got there, but, you know, he was okay when the stuttering wasn't getting in his way, when he wasn't making decisions based on stuttering. And I became okay when, I mean, I realized looking back, I would gauge how our day was by his stuttering. Like, it was so burned in my head that in order for him to be okay, we'd have to, quote, do something. We'd have to fix the stuttering. So if he was stuttering, it wasn't okay. Things were not okay. When I stopped looking at Michael that way, when I started looking like Michael's really doing well with whatever, and the stuttering didn't play in, or, you know, I would be worried about something with Mike, and it wasn't related to stuttering. That wasn't my first place to go. That's when I started becoming okay. Hmm. I don't know if that answers it or not.
Well, it does, and I think it's important to bring out that there were influences in your life. You were working with professionals, so you were hearing voices that I could, as I remember it, it was things like, well, fluency is okay, not stuttering is okay.
Oh, no, when we first started this, stuttering was not okay. We were in therapy with the therapist who was working towards fluency. And if you take a vulnerable family, and at that point we were, me in particular, much more so than Michael, we were vulnerable, and I was afraid he'd not be okay. That's huge. I mean, I try to make sure I remember that while I'm in therapy, that is, that fear that your kid's not going to be okay, that's like paralyzing.
Yeah.
So to hear someone tell you that, quote, they are the specialist, and they, quote, can help your kid be fluent in however long it was going to be, you know, you hold on to that for a long time.
Can you remember that first person or that first moment when you realize, wait a second, stuttering might be okay? Like, was there a moment at the NSA, or is there a moment meeting somebody where you just sort of said, wait a second, maybe we don't have to work so hard towards not stuttering?
Yeah, and I'm just thinking, wow, hopefully. Yeah, it shocks me that this still gets emotional for me. But I do remember, and it was like 3 years after we were already involved with support. So my son was really on his way to being okay with the stuttering, and I was still doing support where it's okay if you stutter, and therapy because maybe we can still make this go away.
Right.
And I remember he was like in middle school, some early middle school, something happened where, about his stuttering. Like he got teased and it might have been a bus, something that upset Michael, so then naturally upset us. And I really remember being in bed with Tom and Tom hugging me as I cried because I was real upset. And Tom saying, because it was like he's in middle school and was still holding on to something's got to change. And I remember Tom saying, you know what? If Mike ends up like John Allback, we're really okay. And it was like, that was that aha moment that, yeah, I just, and I don't know what took me so long. I give it a lot of thought because I'd love to be able to help other people not let it take so long. But that was the moment.
And just for our listeners, and who's John Allback, just so our listeners know?
I'm sorry. John sounded friends with me, but at the time, John was director of National Stuttering Project, and he was the person who, in my head, he was the first person who ever reached out to me from the support world. You know, and the first time I remember speaking with him, I just felt so comfortable and so like someone understood what we were going through. And after the conversation, I realized the man stuttered through the entire conversation. I didn't realize it during our conversation. So that, you know, he was the first person to reach out to us and let us see that there was a different way to be looking at all of this. So that was the turnaround point.
I just want to remind everybody that you're listening to Stutter Talk, Eric and Peter, with special guest Lee Caggiano. I want to get into this a little more because we all hear the term acceptance a lot in our field. And personally, I feel like it gets thrown around a lot. And as we've talked about a bunch, when we start to say things too much, when we start to say the same things too much, they kind of start to lose their meaning a little bit. And we hear things like, oh, I was okay with my stuttering. He's working on being okay with the stuttering. We hear that he's working on his acceptance. And a lot of times I think it's confusing. So I want to go back to one of the points that Roisin made on the B-Team episode. And I think it's kind of helpful. She broke this concept of acceptance down into two pieces. The first one is accepting yourself as a person who stutters. So we can say that you're accepting the self-concept of being a person who stutters. The second part that she brought up was accepting the experience of stuttering. And to me, those two things are very, very different things. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah, like I can remember when I first got some good help for stuttering, I was acceptance man. I wore a cape with an A on my back. And what it meant to me was going out there and showing the world that I was a person who stuttered. And no matter how much I was going to stutter, it was going to be something that I showed people. And it was very helpful at the time for me. But what I'm realizing over the years is that the term acceptance is really, really dynamic in the journey of a stutterer, meaning that it's going to be changing. Now, I am not really okay with speaking how I'm speaking, and this has been going on for a while now, but now my idea of acceptance is, yeah, I have to accept that I'm a person who stutters, and on some level, I'm going to be dealing with my speech until the day I die. And sure, it might get easier over the years, and that might mean working more consciously on my speech, but in some way, I'm going to be thinking about working on it, and I am working towards being okay with that.
That's acceptance also.
Right.
Yeah, that is acceptance. I mean, isn't acceptance, and I think your point that Roisin had made, Woody Stockweather wrote about that in book titled Stuttering, about the acceptance of being a person who stutters and then the acceptance of that actual moment of stuttering. So
yeah, which are way different.
Absolutely.
I don't think I know that there will be times when I get stuck and when I'm having some difficulty talking, that in that moment, I'm not going to be okay with it.
You know, I think, real quick, in Woody's book, I think what he said was, I know what he said. He said acceptance is not approval. And I think that's what you're getting at, the more I think about this topic, I think that for me, acceptance is also tolerating.
It doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
I mean, acceptance is, this is what's happening right now. You don't have to like it.
Yeah.
You don't run from it. I mean, that's accepting, here's where I am right now, and that can mean, and I'm not feeling okay about my stuttering.
You know,
that's acceptance.
And real quick, and then I'll turn it back over to you, Eric. When I listened to Roisin talk on the B-Team show, she didn't say this, but I thought what she was describing was moments of acceptance, and that at one moment you can accept or tolerate your stuttering more than at other moments, and that it's okay to, like, within acceptance, you can get upset with yourself for how you handled that or how you thought about that or how you felt about that. Back to you, Eric.
I think that on some level that's true, and I it's a really complicated topic, you know, and I like how you guys were describing that accepting where you are, whether that be accepting that you're sometimes going to feel bad, accepting that, yeah, sometimes it's just going to suck, but being okay with that. I think a big part of the journey of acceptance for me has been, or another big part of the journey of acceptance for me has been learning to kind of not polarize things so much, you know? So, like, it isn't this idea of just good and bad, stuttering or no stuttering, struggle or no struggle. But sometimes I'm going to be struggling, sometimes I'm going to not be struggling, and those things can kind of be happening at the same time.
Isn't it like that with everything we're working on accepting?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
So where does it get so complicated with stuttering?
I don't know that it is more complicated with stuttering than other things.
Yeah.
It's more so because that's what we're all talking about right now. We're smack in the middle of it. But, you know, and maybe, who knows, maybe, you know, the old thinking fluency or not fluency as far as therapy goes, maybe that adds to the polarization.
On the covert stuttering email group, there was a message that I have permission to read that was sent a couple days ago, and here's what it says. This is from a person who stutters who wrote, "I think the biggest challenge we tend to have is accepting that it's okay to stutter. I am finally learning that once you accept that you stutter, you have an easier time moving on. Acceptance of stuttering plays a part in improving our fluency." And when you read about acceptance, it often ends with, "and then we move to fluency." It just seems that so many people tie acceptance in with fluency, and I think that gets to Eric's point of why is this so hard for stutterers? And I think it's shaking off this fluency god. I mean, at some level, I'm not saying I think this is true, but is it possible that at some level acceptance means you're no longer chasing the fluency god?
I think that's a perfect description. I really do.
Okay.
That's a perfect. The other night I had a teen group here, and I was cheating and asking them about what acceptance meant for them. And I'm thinking of all the different answers they gave, and not chasing the fluency god is a really good way of looking at it. You know, to them it was being able to tell someone you stutter, or being able to not try to hide your stuttering. And those are examples of, you know, the path to not chasing the fluency god.
And when parents come to you, Lee, and I know they do because I've heard it, and when they come to you and they say this whole acceptance, this whole self-help thing is giving up, why is acceptance not giving up?
Well, it depends on what they mean by giving up. Giving up what?
You know, excellent point, Lee. Thank you. Giving up on fluency.
Then, yeah. Giving up on perfection. Mm. Yeah. You know, and it's frustrating at times until, you know, you look back at the parents who are saying that, and or the people who stutter who are still looking for that fluency, chasing the fluency god. They're doing it because they don't think they've got an option. They don't think that they'll be able to succeed and still stutter. I mean, if you look at people you've seen go through this process who are able to say, you know what, I'm not putting any more energy into looking to be fluent. Those are the people who see that they have, there's another way to look at this. It's not that black and white.
Mm.
But yeah, a lot of parents coming in, they're not quote going to give up. They want their kid to be fluent so their kid can be everything they hope their kid could be.
You know, I'm sorry, Eric, go ahead.
No, I just think now might be a good time to take a break, unless you wanted to throw something else in there, Peter.
I think you're right.
This is Judy Custer, web weaver of the Stuttering Homepage. The Stuttering Homepage is dedicated to provide information about stuttering for both consumers and professionals who work with people who stutter. The Stuttering Homepage includes information about therapy, support organizations from around the world, resources for professionals who teach about fluency disorders, an extensive library linking to several books about stuttering that are online, writings from people who stutter, history about stuttering, including voices past and present, where one can listen to many of the pioneers interested in stuttering, links to new technologies and blogs, and much more. Visit the Stuttering Homepage at www.stutteringhomepage.com.
Yo, 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 what's up, y'all? This is Taro from Our Time, and you are listening to the hottest station in town, Stutter Talk.
Welcome back to Stutter Talk. Peter writes us in, Eric Jackson here with Lee Caggiano, a true stuttering expert. You have many hats in the stuttering world. You wear all of them well, Lee. You mean a lot to many of us. So
you know how important that is for me to hear.
Well,
thank you.
And our listeners should hear, and you should hear, that many people talk about making change, but you change people's lives. I know you changed mine. You were and still are a real mentor to me, and you just touch a lot of people, and a lot of people can't say that. So, you know, so we encourage people to visit friendswhostutter.org, be a part of that great organization. And Lee, I'm sure you're aware, you've seen the essay called Welcome to Holland. As I fumble through my notes, it's by Emily Pearl Kingsley, and I was first turned on to this essay through a David Luderman textbook. I'm not going to read the whole essay now, but I'll briefly summarize it, where basically when you're having a baby, it's like going on a great vacation to Italy. And you're on the plane and you have your guidebooks and you're learning some great phrases in Italian, and the plane lands and the captain announces, "Welcome to Holland." And you're really upset because you get off the plane and you're not in Italy. You're in Holland, and Holland isn't the dream, but Italy is the dream. Now, I've greatly summarized the essay, and here is how she ends it. But if you spend your time mourning the fact that you never got to go to Italy, you may never be available to enjoy the very lovely, very special things about Holland. And for me, that's acceptance. For me, when I first started accepting stuttering was when I realized that Holland, my stuttering, was okay. That my dream of not stuttering was something that was not in my cards. But I realized when my back was against the wall, when I was 23 or 24 years old and things were bad and my stuttering wasn't going to go away, I realized that I'm in Holland and Holland's okay and I can be successful in Holland. Lee, take it where you will.
Yeah, we've used that poem. It parent groups of friends, and I still get choked up hearing that poem, and it is such the perfect example of the path towards acceptance. And as we were saying earlier, you're not going to give up on Italy and all that Italy, you thought all that Italy had to offer, until you know there is a Holland. Until you get a glimpse of what Holland has, you're not going to give up, whether it be yourself or your kid or... you're not going to give up. But, and maybe that's how we as people in the self-help movement, that's what you're doing with Stutter Talk. You're giving people examples of Holland.
Hmm.
It's what we do with friends, and that's what many of us try to do in therapy. Let people see Holland.
And
all that Holland, yeah.
And what is Holland? I mean, Holland is cool people who stutter. What else is Holland like?
You know, Holland is, you know, when my son went to college, first went off to college, and I called his answering machine. He's sharing it with some other kid. And the message that was left was by Michael.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are moments. These are moments that let you know, I could go on about that on a personal level. It's hearing the kid who was sitting in the back of the class not talking, hearing him get up in front of the class and give a presentation on stuttering.
Hmm.
And being really comfortable with it. I mean, there's just example after example of how cool Holland is.
And when I...
But you gotta be in it.
My first self-help meeting was a picnic at your house, and I did not want to be there, and Phil Schneider literally threw me in his car. I mean, he was gentle about it. So we end up at your place, and... I think Elizabeth Mendez and Elizabeth Capstein and Jeff Shames come to the door, and I met Holland. I met successful, cool people who stutter. I met an attorney who stuttered that day. I met somebody trying to be an actor who stutters that day. And I realized that stuttering is my future, and it's a good future.
Yeah. You know, I'm so glad you brought up that poem, because as much as I've read and used that poem, I don't think I ever gave thought to what it does.
Hmm.
But... It does. Knowing what Holland has to offer, that's how we make this all work. It's, you know, we do it in therapy when a kid is really, really not comfortable stuttering. You know, and you set it up so when he walks out, I set up when he walks out of my office, there's some cool kid out in the waiting room stuttering. It's like little glimpses of Holland. Because you're right, if Phil hadn't picked you up bodily and put you in that car, you didn't want to hear about Holland.
No, in fact, I thought Holland was a dump. I thought Holland was an unsafe country that should be hidden and not talked about. And then Holland turned out to be beautiful.
Yeah.
We know that your time is short, so I want to bring up one point. I hate to read it, but I am going to read it. Wendell Johnson and I think Dorothy Muller had a great chapter on coping. And here it is. I am convinced there is a way to cope with any problem. It is first recognizing what the problem is and then stating it so clearly and so concisely that you have directed yourself toward changing what can be changed. And when you have changed what can be changed, you learn to accept the rest. That is, you accept what you must accept until you can state more clearly and more concisely the problem as you now see it. Then you go on to make another change. And I think what Johnson is saying is that acceptance is not a beginning. It's a beginning, it's a middle, and it's an end. And in another place in the chapter, Johnson says that the therapist, they have to accept this too. That the therapist has to accept that our clients do their best, and we accept the rest. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that, Lee.
I think it goes right back to what parents feel. Sometimes when you're with the client, you want the best for that client, what you think might be the best. And it takes work. It takes understanding and knowing what change, what is really involved in change, to know that where your client is at is exactly where they need to be at that point. It continues for all of us. Any change we're working on, any awareness, it's not, you know, you start and you finish. It's continual. And that the idea of once some changes are made, then other changes can be made. goes for all of us. It should never be over, and I need to put it out there, I'm clearly not talking about fluency.
Yeah.
But it all, and as we were just reading that, talking about Holland, I had the opportunity the other day to take two 11-year-old clients, was one of their birthdays, two 11-year-old girls, for pedicures, something I've never done here on Long Island.
Right.
This is what she wanted to do. And as she sat in the little chair getting her feet pedicured, stuttering away and chatting away, continually chatting away, I saw the woman looking up at her with that quizzical look on her face.
Yeah.
So the woman asked me, you know, who these girls were, and I explained, and she's still looking up at Anna, and Anna is chatting away, and the woman looked at me and said, "Well, does therapy make this better?" And I just held it, you know, gave it over to Anna, who explained what she works on in stuttering, and I'm sorry there was no one else to see this little girl sitting in that big pedicure chair with the little massage thing going on her back, so her little body's moving too, which added to it, and she's explaining what happens in a moment of stuttering, how it feels, and how important it is to not worry about it all the time. To this woman giving her a pedicure. I watched that. That's Holland.
That is Holland.
That's Holland. You know, and Holland, you know, Holland is different for everybody. Everyone's going to see different things in Holland also.
Now that we've talked a little bit about acceptance, let's talk about the wonderful video, Stuttering for Kids by Kids, published by the Stuttering Foundation. It's available for streaming free online. It's an inexpensive video. Who's this video for? I know that you had a hand in this video, so who's the video for, and why is it so special?
The reason it's so special is because it shows clinicians, and most importantly, children who stutter, it gives them a glimpse of Holland. It's the only resource out there that shows kids who stutter stuttering, talking about their stuttering, putting it in this great perspective of, you know, I'm a 10-year-old kid, I play baseball, I'm really good at this, and I stutter. Just one piece of what they are, who they are. And the kids are honestly talking about stuttering, things that work well, things that don't work well. But the most important thing, you know, for some kid who's never met another kid who stutters, or a parent who's never seen another kid who stutters, for them to be able to take a look at this very, very affordable DVD and see kids stuttering, that gives them a glimpse.
It really
of what
does.
Can be. And that's why I just applaud SFA for putting that video out, because there's nothing else like it.
No, there's not.
Friends. Yeah, we've copied little pieces and that we've got clips of kids stuttering on the Friends webpage for that same reason, but the SFA video is a phenomenal resource.
And it's 12 minutes long, and it only shows children who stutter. White, black, all different colors, boys, girls.
Yep.
There's no adults in it. One way I use it is my children who stutter come to speech class and they invite their friends or their siblings. And we watch the video together and have an open conversation about stuttering. Can you tell us one way you've used the video?
I've used the video more for asking for parents who are still really, really worried. I've given the video to these parents to let them watch it. Let them watch it alone without the kids to start. Let them get a feel for what stuttering and handling stuttering well can look like. You know, and the fact that there are so many differences in the kids, everything about the kids, their ages, their stuttering, it puts it out there that stuttering is something that can be talked about.
Mm.
You know, and I think the idea of having family members watch it is great. I'm just thinking that could also possibly be used in a classroom, although I've not done that. I don't see why it couldn't.
I've done that. I've had children show the film to an entire class. We've made popcorn. What I love doing is watching Stuttering for Kids by Kids and then writing reviews of it to put in the student newsletter.
It's a great idea.
Yeah. But we know that you have to run, and we accept that you have to run, but we appreciate your time very much this morning. Lee Caggiano joining us here at Stutter Talk. Lee, thanks for everything you do for the stuttering world.
Well, thank you, Stutter Talk, for inviting me. This was great, as always. Enjoy, and hopefully I'll be back.
Thanks, Lee.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Well, that was really cool to have Leon. I just want to mention that if people are interested in this wonderful film, Stuttering for Kids by Kids, you can find it at www.stutteringhelp.org. That's the website for the Stuttering Foundation. And we'll put links up at stuttertalk.com where you can also find the video streaming online, so they make it available inexpensively and available to watch for free online. Welcome back to Stutter Talk, changing how you think about stuttering one podcast at a time. Peter writes us in, Eric Jackson, 206-666-5340. Eric, when we spoke to Gene Cooper last week, there was something I wanted to bring up, and I forgot. And this is it. I'm actually going to quote from one of his studies from 1966. This is describing the subjects in the study. The stutterers received 1 hour of individual therapy from the same clinician 5 days a week for a period of 10 weeks. In addition, 10 of the clients received approximately 3 hours of group therapy a day, but not necessarily with the same clinician. So you have people receiving speech therapy 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, for 10 weeks. And I've read similar accounts by Van Riper. And what I'm wondering is, have people who stutter, has the field of speech language pathology forgotten how much work it takes to work on stuttering?
I'm wondering how the hell that happened. I mean, how do people have that much time? And I think it's like we're so flooded with stuff in our lives now that, like, who the hell has 4 hours a day for 10 weeks?
Another way to look at it is, who doesn't have that much time if your stuttering is that big of a deal? I mean,
right, yeah.
I just, God, it's going to sound like I'm tooting my own horn, but I just remember working so many hours a day on stuttering and having just so many assignments, most of them self-generated, to do on my own, and going and visiting the Successful Stuttering Management Program, which of course is an intensive program, and seeing that the assignments never stop. So you have all day of therapy, and you go home, and you have all day of homework, all night of doing stuttering homework. Homework being real world, going out and working on stuff. Stuttering, voluntary stuttering, advertising, speech tools, whatever it was, it just was always working on stuttering. So,
and,
yeah, please go ahead.
And you could also look at it like how many of us, especially when we're in dark places, spend all day from the moment we wake up to the moment we go to sleep thinking about stuttering.
Yeah.
Albeit in a negative and dark way, but like, that's a lot of hours, you know,
great point.
16 hours, let's say.
Really great point. Really great point. Yeah.
So why not maybe think about, spending a quarter of that time thinking about your stuttering in a positive, productive way with the help of a good clinician.
Yeah. And more than
good person.
Right. And more than just thinking about stuttering, but doing things.
Right, yeah.
Right. I know you agree with that. So that's a really excellent point. I mean, how much energy do people who stutter put into not dealing with stuttering, to avoiding stuttering, to sort of, you know, closing our eyes to the whole stuttering thing and just hoping we get through those tough spots? I mean, I know Woody Starkweather talked a lot about it. People who stutter sort of being in the clouds, not really being in the moment of stuttering. And that was certainly my experience. So,
and just constantly being in fear of it too.
Yeah.
Like, I finally got around to reading the coping chapter that you mentioned before in the episode with Lee. And I just think about changing your language. You know, he was a semantics person, but think about it like this: changing your language for 4 hours, just thinking about it in a little bit of a different way, as opposed to just continually going down that dark spiral of uh-oh and fear and shame and all those negative emotions.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's not that much time at all. Yeah, you're right.
Right? And that's such a good point. It's not that much time at all, right? 4 hours is not that much time at all, right?
Exactly. When you can put it into perspective, you know, like, oh, well, you're probably spending 16 hours of like tough, hard, I'll call it work for lack of a better term right now, but it's hard time spent, you know?
Yeah.
How about taking a quarter of that and working on changing it and thinking about it differently and thinking about it in a little bit more of a positive way?
Yeah.
It's just not that much.
Yeah, and I'm
like, which is crazy to think about, though, isn't it? Because you think of now, how could I go to 4 hours of therapy a day? And probably in the traditional sense, if you're an adult, it might be difficult. But in the grand scheme of things, it's just not.
No, I totally agree with you. And, you know, I'm so glad you brought up the Wendell Johnson and Dorothy Muller chapter on coping again, because they said success is a feeling. It is not the name for anything in nature. And I love that quote. And I think we could take away the term success and say acceptance is a feeling. It is not the name for anything in nature. Like, we don't go outside with a shovel and dig up a pile of acceptance. Acceptance is what we make it, and success is what we make it. And
yes.
I wish I would have said that to Lee at the beginning, or to both units.
I have to be honest with you. Like, I was so scattered in that episode. Acceptance, the term of acceptance, I'll just say right now, has been such a focal point in how I went about handling my stuttering and learning to manage my stuttering. But a huge, huge point that I am just starting to realize is exactly that. That acceptance, it's a feeling.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like this tangible thing that I can say, okay, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, and then I'll have acceptance. You know, it doesn't work like that. And like, he talks a lot in the chapter about being more descriptive. And we've obviously spoken a lot about that too over the past bunch of episodes, especially with the Dean Williams, stuff that we talked about a lot. But like, really describing what you want to change and what you're shooting for. You know, I got so frustrated, I get frustrated a lot, especially when we were just talking with Lee, in the sense that I couldn't get my thoughts across because there was so much that I wanted to say regarding like what acceptance is. But that's the problem, is that like, it's really, really difficult to like state, you know, what acceptance is. And that's because it's a feeling.
Yeah.
Acceptance. It's like, I almost want to say it isn't describable, or at least not easily describable.
Well, see, I'm so glad you say all that, because where you took it is great, because I get exasperated too. Like, you read about stuttering and you read about acceptance all the time, and nobody ever says what acceptance is. It's just like this vague thing in the clouds. And I think that's why some people get so frustrated by, I mean, when you go to self-help conferences, there are people who say, I don't understand acceptance. I don't know why I have to accept my stuttering. And I think part of the reason is it's so vague.
Exactly. And that's why one of the reasons why acceptance gets pegged by most people out there, and I'm including SLPs when I talk about this, as giving up, you know, because it's not understood. A lot of people, me included, like, you know, don't really know what acceptance is, you know? So it's like, oh, acceptance, well, that has to mean that you're just gonna accept how you're speaking right now. And no, that's not okay, because you're not speaking like most other people do in this world, you know?
Yeah.
It's just so confusing. Like, even right now, I'm like having such a hard time, you know,
right,
describing what I mean.
I still don't know what acceptance is, Eric, but what, you know, for this show, I was reviewing Wendell Johnson and David Luderman, who, for those who don't know, is a great author on counseling materials. And one of the things I really like is that this is what they say, and I agree, that acceptance, a part of acceptance is you accept where you are at any time. And you make changes, and then you reevaluate, where am I? And then you make more changes. And, you know, I think that some people describe acceptance as a process. It's a beginning, it's a middle, and it might be an end. And I like that. Again, I'm not saying that's what acceptance is, but I do like this idea that we accept where we are, we look at where we are, we make changes, we accept where we then are, and we make more changes. And
that's
a productive way to look at it, I think.
Exactly. And the thing is that the description that you just made, you know, I took that as describing acceptance there. You know, that to a lot of people, I suppose, could sound really vague, but I just don't know if there is a is a better or sorry, not better, but
yeah,
a more concrete way to explain to people who don't think about this all the time what acceptance when it comes to stuttering is.
Well, I would like to give a closing thought on acceptance, and then I'd like to hear a closing thought from you. Going back to where I started, which is being in a bad place in my early 20s, for me, acceptance started with facing denial and acknowledging denial and acknowledging that my stuttering was not going to go away. I had spent my whole life hoping, expecting my stuttering to go away. It did not. So acceptance for me started with, I really am a person who stutters. I have to admit it to myself and to other people. Then I reached out for help, and acceptance was, I have to let other people into my world. I can't do this alone. And then acceptance became, oh, here are some ideas. Here are some new ways to think about stuttering, some new things to consider, like, people are telling me I should meet other people who stutter. I don't want to do that. I'm not going to do that. I accept that I'm not going to do that. And I accept that other people think I should do that. Then I accepted, well, maybe it's time that I listen to some people and try it, even though I don't want to do it. And here are some speaking approaches or strategies to try, and I'm going to try them. And maybe I'll enjoy some, I won't enjoy others. And I can accept that, you know, this is hard and that I'm trying something new and I might not have the success I want, but I'm going to stick with it, and I'll accept that I'm going to start to let my stuttering out in the open, and it's painful, but I'm going to accept that and see where it takes me. And so for me, like, that is a process of acceptance, like just really tied in with awareness. Like, this is who I am. This is where I am. And this is what I'm going to try. And let's keep going with it.
I'll go back to where I started too, just by saying that to me, acceptance, as you were just describing, dude, it's dynamic. It changes. You know, to use one blanket term, acceptance, and then have it flung across, you know, the stuttering blogosphere would be a huge disservice. And the last thought I have is, like, actually, that's the last thought I have.
Well, that's great. I think that's a great place to leave it.
Okay.
So let's thank our guest, Lee Caggiano, the director of Friends, the National Association of Young People Who Stutter, for joining us again. Thank you, Eric. As always, I enjoyed this show very much.
Yeah, me too. I just want to encourage people to write us at stuttertalk@stuttertalk.com with questions or comments about the show. Also, we're scheduled to speak with Emily Blunt in a couple of days, Peter, which is exciting. The beautiful megastar and talented Emily Blunt. And I think it might be cool if people who are listening to this show maybe have questions or want us to ask Emily Blunt anything. We might read some of those on air. But please, write with questions.
And don't ask us for her phone number, because that's one question we cannot answer.
That's right.
And remember to pick up a copy of Eric's forthcoming book, How to Use Your Stuttering to Meet Chicks. And for those who haven't figured
that
out
that joke's
yet,
been killed.
Yeah, and for those who think we're serious, there is no book. It's a joke.
How do you know, Peter?
It might be forthcoming. Anyway, StutterTalk at StutterTalk.com, 206-666-5340. Talk to you later, Eric.
See you, bud.